Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and I use the pronouns she and her. I am delighted to serve this beautiful, blooming congregation. All are welcome here, no matter what you believe or don't believe, whatever your vaccination status, young or old, moving or still, laughing or crying, all are welcome. Today we get to celebrate Flower Communion. In this service, we remember the beauty of each person and the way that beauty grows when we enter a community of faith and love. We remember that we each bring something of value to our lives together, and we can each count on the love of this community to hold us. Today at 12 p.m., we are having our first major gathering of woofers since March 8, 2020, the day I was so blessed to be installed as your minister. It is a picnic. Please bring your own food and drink and utensils. It is okay not to have a mask on and to sit near other people, but if you are unvaccinated, we ask that you do mask when you are not eating. I want to remind everyone that children 12 and under cannot yet be vaccinated. So please consider masking up around the kids to support them and keep them healthy. We won't be having online coffee hour today so people can get to the picnic. However, I'm hoping this summer that we will have both online and in-person coffee hour to be inclusive of everyone. We need people to host and organize these events, so please send me an email at minister@woof.org if you can help. I am lighting the chalice this morning with the words of Amy Zucker Morgenstern. Within the heart of the flower, the fountain of beauty, within the heart of community, a fire that warms and dances, within the heart of each of us, a spark of the spirit of life. Holy, holy, holy. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. Today, I want to tell you a story that we tell every year. We tell this story every year when we celebrate Flower Communion. This year, I have adapted this story from Lamp in Every Corner, our UU storybook. Once a long, long time ago, in a land far away, no, this isn't the story of Luke Skywalker. This is another story. Once a long time ago in the land far away, there was a church. This church was built in a land ravaged by war, about to be thrust into yet another war. The building did not look much like a church. It didn't have a piano. It had no art. No beauty adorned its walls. It had no candles or chalices. It had no flowers. The church did have some things. It had four walls and a ceiling and a floor. It had a door and a few windows. It had some wooden chairs. But that was all, plain and simple. The church also had people who came to it every Sunday. It had a minister, and his name was Norbert Chopek, who believed, as we do today, that everyone is worthy. He had been a minister at the Plain and Simple Church for 2 years. Every Sunday, he spoke to the people of love, acceptance, and community. When he was done speaking, the people talked a little amongst themselves, and then they went home. And that was all. No music, no candles, no food, not even coffee. After a particularly long and hard winter, springtime came to the city of Prague,
and Norbert and his wife Maya went out for a stroll. The rains had come, the birds were singing, the flowers were blooming all over the land. The world was beautiful. Then an idea came to him, simple and clear, plain as day. The next Sunday, he asked all the people in the church to bring a flower, a budding branch, or even a twig. Each person was to bring one. What kind, they asked, what color, what size? You choose, he said. Each of you choose what you like. And so on the next Sunday, which was the first day of summer, the people came with flowers of all different colors and sizes and kinds. There were yellow daisies and red roses. There were white lilies and blue asters, blue-eyed pansies and light green leaves, pink and purple, orange and gold. There were all those colors and more. Flowers filled all the vases, and the church wasn't so simple and plain anymore. Minister Chaffick spoke to the people while they listened, sitting quietly and still in those hard wooden chairs. These flowers are like ourselves, he said, different colors and different shapes, different sizes, each needing different kinds of care, but each beautiful, each important, and special in its own way. When he was done speaking, the people talked a little bit among themselves, and then they each chose a different flower from the vases before they went home. And that was all. And it was beautiful, plain, and simple. This is how flower communion, as we know it, was born. Norbert and Maya led that congregation through the beginning of the Nazi regime, continuing to offer life-affirming ministry through unbelievable horror and trauma. We celebrate Flower Communion each year to honor their memory and to remind ourselves of the continued beauty and grace that can be found in each and every one of us. Our Time for All Ages today is one of my most favorite books, Miss Rumphius, Stories and Pictures by Barbara Cooney. If you are a child or a youth, or you feel like getting closer to your screen, please feel free to come a little closer. The Lupin Lady lives in a small house overlooking the sea. It is in between the rocks around her house grow blue and purple and rose-colored flowers. The Lupin Lady is a little old, but she has not always been that way. I know. She is my great aunt, and she told me so. Once upon a time, she was a little girl named Alice who lived in a city by the sea. From the front stoop, she could see the wharves and the bristling masts of tall ships. Many years ago, her grandfather had come to America on a large sailing ship. Now he worked at the shop at the bottom of the house, making figureheads for the prows of ships. Alice's grandfather was an artist. He painted pictures too. When he was very busy, Alice helped him put in the skies. In the evening, Alice sat on her grandfather's knee and listened to his stories of faraway places. Alice would say, "When I grow up, I too will go to faraway places, and when I grow old, I too will live beside the sea." "That is all very well, little Alice," said her grandfather, "but there is a third thing you must do." "What is that?" asked Alice. "You must do something to make the world more beautiful," said her grandfather. "All right," said Alice, but she did not know what that could be. In the meantime, Alice got up and washed her face and ate porridge for breakfast. She went to school and came home and did her homework. And pretty soon, Alice grew up. Then she set out to do the three things she had told her grandfather she was going to do. She left home and went to live in another city far from the sea and the salt air. She worked in a library. Some of the books told her about faraway places. People called her Miss Rumphius now. Sometimes she went to the conservatory in the middle of the park. When she stepped inside on a wintry day, the warm, moist air wrapped itself around her, and the sweet smell of jasmine filled her nose. "This is almost like a tropical island," said Miss Rumphius, "but not quite." So Miss Runfius went to a real tropical island where people kept cockatoos and monkeys as pets. She walked on long beaches picking up beautiful shells. One day she met the Bapa Raja, king of a fishing village, and they became good friends. My great aunt Alice climbed tall mountains where the snow never melted. She went through jungles and across deserts. She saw lions playing and kangaroos jumping. And everywhere she went, she made friends she would never forget. Until one day, getting off a camel, she hurt her back. "What a foolish thing to do," said Miss Rumphius. "Well, I have certainly seen faraway places. Maybe it is time to find my place by the sea." And it was. And she did. From the porch of her new house, Miss Rumphius could watch the sun come up. She watched it shine in the sky and sparkle on the water. She saw it set in the evening. She started a little garden among the rocks that surrounded her house, and she planted a few flower seeds in the stony ground. Miss Rumphius was almost perfectly happy. "But there is still one thing I have to do," she said. "I have to do something to make the world more beautiful." "But what? The world is already pretty nice," she thought, looking out over the ocean. The next spring, Miss Rumphius was not very well. The flowers she had planted in the summer before had come up and bloomed in spite of the stony ground. She could see them from her bedroom window, blue and purple and rose-colored. "Lupins," Miss Rumphius said with satisfaction. "I have always loved lupins the best. I wish I could plant more seeds this summer so I could have still more flowers next year," but she was not able to. After winter, spring came. Miss Rumphius was feeling much better. Now she could take walks again. One afternoon, she started to go up and over the hill where she had not been in a long time. "I don't believe my eyes," she cried when she got to the top. For there on the other side of the hill was a large patch of blue and purple and rose-colored lupins. "It was the wind," she said as she knelt in delight. "It was the wind that brought the seeds from my gardens to here, and the birds must have helped." Then Miss Rumphius had a wonderful idea. She hurried home and got out her seed catalogs. She sent off for the very best seed houses for 5 bushels of lupin seed. All that summer, Miss Rumphius, her pockets full of seeds, wandered over fields and headlands sowing lupins. She scattered seeds along the highways and down the country lanes. She flung handfuls of them around the schoolhouse and in back of the church. She tossed them into hollows and along stone walls. Her back didn't hurt her anymore at all. Now some people called her that crazy old lady. The next spring, there were lupins everywhere. Fields and hillsides were covered with blue and purple and rose-colored flowers. They bloomed along the highways and down the lanes. Bright patches lay around the schoolhouse and down in the hollows. And along the stone walls grew the beautiful flowers. Miss Rumphius had done the third most difficult thing of all. My great aunt Alice, Miss Rumphius, is very old now. Her hair is very white. Every year there are more and more lupins. Now they call her the Lupin Lady. Sometimes my friends stand with me outside her gate, curious to see the old, old lady who planted the fields of lupins. When she invites us in, they come slowly. They think she is the oldest woman in the world. Often she tells us stories of faraway places. "When I grow up," I tell her, "I too will go to faraway places and come home to live by the sea." "That is all very well, little Alice," says my aunt, "but there is a third thing you must do." "What is that?" I ask. "You must do something to make the world more beautiful." "All right," I say. But I do not know yet what that can be. As we celebrate Flower Communion today, I invite all of you to think about the ways in which you make our community a more beautiful place, the ways in which you will make our world a more beautiful place. as we emerge from this pandemic, let us all think of how we want to create the new normal, the new world that we will inhabit together.
I offer this flower communion prayer from Claire Feingold Thorne, which is based on a very popular prayer by the Reverend Max Coote. Let us give thanks for the bouquet of people that flower in our lives. We give thanks for children like tulips and iris. They multiply around us, making the world ever more filled with color, beauty, and new life. May we bless them as they replant themselves even further from us, knowing that they need their own space to grow into. We give thanks for generous friends, as constant in bloom as echinacea, and whose gifts lift up our body and our spirit. We give thanks for feisty friends, as indomitable as geraniums, and for continuous friends who, like bittersweet and ivy, hold on and never let go, and can never be gotten rid of. For crotchety friends, as prickly as rose bushes, their beauty a secret that is only discovered through careful gardening. For surprising friends, who at first glance seem dour and then blossom into joy as quickly as forsythia. For funny friends, silly as snapdragons, and serious friends as complex as chrysanthemums. For comfortable friends, their gentle presence is soothing as the smell of lilacs. For stormy friends who stand by us in hard times, like lily of the valley that cannot be deterred by shade or shadow. For old friends nodding like sunflowers in the evening time. And young friends coming on as fast as flocks. For friends as unpretentious as dogwood, as steadfast as azalea, and who, like snowdrops, can be counted on to see you through the winter and remind you that spring always comes. For loving friends who wind around us like wisteria and embrace us, despite our blights, wilts, and witherings. And finally, for forget-me-not friends, gone but never forgotten. Their beauty lives on in our memories and hearts. For this bouquet of people who brighten our lives each in their own way, we give thanks. Amen. Now let us take time for prayer, meditation, or reflection, as is your tradition. Did you know that when they tickle rats, they laugh? We can't hear it. Rats communicate in a frequency well above our hearing range, but they do laugh, a high-pitched clicking as they wiggle in mirth. They also laugh when they play, the rough and tumble play of all young mammals, chasing and pouncing and biting and scratching at one another without really hurting. Mammals play. It's just what we do. The impulse is hardwired into our deep brain beneath the neocortex. Our theme this month is play. We are going to be exploring both story and play all summer long. Because after months of isolation and fear and uncertainty, wow, do we need to play? We need to play with all the kinds of people that flower in our lives. Play is so joyful. It is just letting go, relaxing, laughing, fun, stepping away from that tight-jawed intensity and boredom some of us have experienced in the last 15 months, and into a long, deep breath, reveling in the bright days of the natural world and the solid bodies of others we can wrap in hugs. Older languages connect the word play to movement. In Latin, it refers to leaping fishes and fluttering birds. I love that imagery. In Anglo-Saxon, the word is connected to the feel of the ship on the waves or the trembling of a flame. In Sanskrit and German, play relates to the movement of the wind. Consider the rolling play of puppies or piles of laughing preschoolers or a game of tag between older children. It is all joyful movement. Play is anything that we do simply for the pleasure of doing it. There's no required outcome. There's no need for it. It is just for fun. Play is tossing flower seeds across the landscape, growing flowers in your garden, picking flowers wherever they bloom, breathing in their deep scent, admiring their tender beauty, painting them, writing about them, braiding their stems into necklaces, blowing the fluff of dandelion heads. Play connects us with ourselves, each other, and the world we are so lucky to get to live in. I find it amusing, since play is for pleasure, that research and articles on play typically focus on how it improves us in ways that Americans very often want to be improved. It makes us more creative, better at our jobs, less stressed, improves memory, and strengthens relationships. We should, because it is good for us. And in white American culture, of course we want to do things because they are good for us, make us better people, and not just because it is so fun. Even if play is purposeless in the moment we engage in it, many of us just want to make sure it really has a purpose. Purposelessness is not particularly valued in white American culture. Play does matter, though. Play really matters. It matters to us as a congregation of people who come together to grow in faith and in love. It matters to children. Children and all young mammals are compelled to play. Play is essential for proper brain development and social development in mammals. Research indicates that pulling away from recess to focus on drilling math, reading, and writing into children is actually educationally detrimental. Not playing is even more socially detrimental. Studies of rats and kittens have shown that if they are deprived of play during development, they become socially awkward and are more frustrated and aggressive. More chilling, in studies that try to determine why a person becomes a mass killer, deficient play, quite to the surprise of researchers originally, is a consistent indicator. As preschoolers and elementary children, either these children did not play enough or were unable to appropriately play. Stuart Brown spent his early career studying men who killed people, and he switched to researching play after he recognized how lack of play is an important part of this devastating outcome. He believes all children who do not play or play poorly should be taught how to do it. While play is critical for children, it is necessary for all people to be happy and in good relationships. We bond through play, through joking around, playing games, doing art, sports, or whatever ways we spend time with others that brings joy to us. Brown writes, play refreshes a long-term adult-adult relationship. Some of the hallmarks of its refreshing, oxygenating action are humor, the enjoy of novelty, the capacity to share a lighthearted sense of the world's ironies, the enjoyment of mutual storytelling, the capacity to openly divulge imagination and fantasy. These playful communications and interactions, when nourished, produce a climate for easy connection and deepening, more rewarding relationship, true intimacy. These characteristics nurture our closest relationships, but also in a community where we strive, in the words of the Reverend Kendall Gibbons, to be the kind of people who rise intuitively to the demands of the good, who live in the heaven of the present, fed by the beauty of creation. Playing together is fun, and it turns out it is really good for us. While the American retail industry depends on selling objects for play, from PetSmart to Michaels to places that sell games and boats and RVs and so much more, Americans absolutely work more than they play. The average hours Americans work has gone up steadily since the 1970s. With smartphones and the internet, many jobs put people on call all day and all night. Americans work 181 hours a year more than the Japanese, who are so known for their overwork. And we work significantly more than Europeans. We are the only industrial country without federally required vacation, sick leave, and parental leave. We don't live in a society that plays very much. We believe in work so much to the point that in the last 20 years, we've even taken play away from children, their recesses and their free time, so they can study and take lessons, which are more purposeful. And sometimes we make that mistake in congregational life too. We forget to play, or how much fun everything is when your attitude is more playful towards the tasks at hand, when you can joke and have fun with the people around you as you do the important work of bringing on congregational life, making sure we're here with spiritual and personal development and social justice. At its essence, I believe play is about delighting in ourselves, one another, and the world. I love playing with others because it allows our pure selves to engage with the pure self of another person, their personality, and their way of being. Sometimes, because in play, the stakes are so low, we relax and let go of the way we think we should be. So we can show the particular unique ways we think, our sense of humor, and the ways we handle disappointment and winning. My family does puzzles when we gather at the winter holidays. I like puzzles because I love patterns. These just please my mind. I love cards for the same reason. I think the ways we each like to play allows us to just be with ourselves how we are. I love patterns and I love stories. I know people who like to move and dance, others who like games and sports. We all have ways of being that bring us pleasure, and play lets us engage with them. I love doing puzzles with my kids because I get to watch them just be them with a challenge that has zero stakes. How they go about problem solving, dealing with frustration, and engage with everyone around the table. It's endlessly interesting to me. I delight in how they are so uniquely themselves. We are doing something together, each bringing our own strategy to the puzzle before us. We laugh a lot and tease and joke. We connect, each an individual flower coming together in a bouquet that is our family. This experience is true for me with all of you as well. When we play or are playful with each other, I delight in you. discovering who you are and the way you brighten the world, particularly. We can all delight in each other and laugh and enjoy. Connecting through play is easy, and without much effort, we find ourselves becoming a bouquet of a congregation. Did you know that if they isolate young rats from their playmates for a while, when they return, they play more intensely? They have play deficit that they are driven to fill. I am imagining that many of us have play deficits these days. So let us have a summer of play. Let us bloom in joy and beauty. Let us make beautiful bouquets together. Let us go, beautiful people, into the garden and play. I extinguish this flame, but not the beauty and sustaining grace of our faith. May it stay with you until we meet again.